You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Hello, lovely humans. I'm Wyo Lee, and you are listening to Sex Stories, a podcast where we make the world a more loving place by talking to happy harlots and trailblazing trollops who help us open up conversations about pleasure and desire. Our guest today is a non-monogamous, bisexual, pansexual, overtly sexual, kinky switch who is in an open relationship with the internet. She is into impact play, giving and receiving, cream pies, all kinds of legal consensual experiences that affirm the full range of human sexuality, and speaking from personal experience makes an excellent guide. A talented singer-songwriter with a very sexy voice you are about to hear. Since 2018, she has been a legal brothel courtesan at Sherry's Ranch and a porn actress who is repped by ATMLA if you want to hire her. Welcome, Jupiter Jetson!
Hello.
I am so excited to have you here. This has been a long time coming. Could you start off by telling us, if you had to rate yourself on a sexual shame-o-meter today, with 10 being so full of shame and 1 being not really shamey at all, where do you fall today, right now, and why did you pick that number?
Oh, like a -9.
Okay, was it always like that, or did you go on a roller coaster to get there?
Oh, no, I had to, like, I had to visit the theme park. I had to, like...
Go on all the rides?
Go on all the rides.
You like to ride.
Wait on all the lines. All of it. I had to get sick off a few corn dogs.
I bet you have. Okay, but, like, tangibly speaking, do you feel comfy saying if there were times where you felt more shamey, or, like, what kind of helped you get to a -9?
Oh, I mean, honestly, growing up with a lot of sexual shame is how I had the motivation to get to a -9, because I definitely... At least for the important formative years of childhood, I definitely grew up in a very repressive, sex is bad, sexual exploration, you know, non-traditional gender identity, all of that is bad, weird, and gross, and stay away from it. So I had to spread my slutty wings.
Do you feel comfy saying, like, what region of where you were origined from?
Oh, yeah. Everybody who follows me, if you do, I'm from Cleveland.
Okay. So growing up, you weren't a -9. You were more of a, like, where do you feel like you hovered in your formative-ish years?
I would say up until the age of about, I'd say 11 or 12, I was really on, like, the... Sex must be terrible and bad and evil. And then I started having questions about other things I had been told and taught and conditioned to not approve of. And so I started questioning other aspects of it. And yeah, I'd say I started realizing that there might not be anything wrong with sexuality from a I'd say probably in general a fairly young age from what I've come to find out.
And you've confirmed it thoroughly. Did you get the -9 because you helped so many other people smash their shame? Is that what earns -9? Do I have -9? I wonder.
I think you have -9. You definitely. You might have more -9 than I
do. I don't know. I feel like sometimes...
I think this is like Celsius, though. Like, the further you get away from zero, the more extreme it becomes.
True. Good point. Can you tell us, in general, if you could articulate, what is sex to you?
Oh, I mean, sex is, I mean, at the end of the day, it's an exchange of energy, and it's a very specific energy. I mean, I don't buy into the idea that sex is P in V or is any one particular act.
Only that. Like, because it, like, P it and is. V is, does
that
count
is sex,
as, it's
of
in
course.
The, okay, okay.
No. I
it's
mean,
just a square and a rectangle
don't get me wrong,
situation.
I'm a very sexual being, but it's still more than a handshake.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But no, I'm just saying it's not limited to that. I think what a sex is, any exchange of intimacy that, oh, God, that's a great question. Like,
well, and
honestly,
then for you.
Do you feel like you had sex? I guess it's kind of like the. Do you feel like you had sex? Because if the answer is yes, then yeah, you had sex.
That's a great answer. Okay, but how about in a professional context? Because for you, it becomes then more important to define acts of sex, right? For work?
Well, yeah, but all of the sex acts that I offer for work are all sex.
Got
it. That's why it's oral sex, you know.
Manual sex?
Manual
no, what's that
sex.
Called?
Wait,
what
I call that mutual masturbation or, you know.
Or one-way masturbation?
I confuse so many people saying digital sex that oh. they thought it was like an internet thing. And I'm like, no, you're like these the digits. Yeah, you know, like those digits.
Could you articulate how important or like how is sex important in your life? Like how important is sex in your life and how is sex important in your life?
I mean, I obviously there is the importance of it in being my means of supporting myself. I mean, sex and sexuality are what pays my mortgage. But I would say that sex was also very responsible because you have those hormonal urges and all of that, that it was very much so a driving factor in me accepting all of the parts of myself from a much younger age than I probably would have. And it led me on a lot more adventures. So
I feel you.
Oh, it's like my adventure time, you know?
And then can you tell us, how are you making the world a sexier, more loving place?
I mean, like anything else, you do it one person at a time. I very much so feel like I was put here to be a bit of a sexual Sherpa, you know?
I was called a sexual Sherpa by one of my lovers, my pandemic lover. We never kissed. It was weird. But what does that mean to you? Or like, how do you understand that?
You know, I feel like, you know, I'm not unique in having had a fairly repressed attitude towards sexuality in the house I grew up in. And I mean, society as a whole is really repressed. So everybody carries a lot of shame. Not everybody, but a lot of people carry a lot of shame. And I really like kind of, you know that you can climb the mountain. Let me guide you up that mountain and affirm the entire step of the way that your footing is sure.
And if your pack gets too heavy, if your shame pack gets too heavy, you can help lift the load?
Yeah. to a certain, well, I mean, I feel like it's really powerful to be able to, I think of myself as a sexy sin eater, you know,
I just learned about those from my best friend after years of doing this. I was like, what's a sin eater?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, but it doesn't destroy you because sin eaters get like destroyed or something by taking
this thing. No, it adds to my sexual power.
I love that.
And I sometimes feel like, you know, it's given me the opportunity to see the things that nobody will share with anybody else. Like people don't admit their kinks, but when they're coming here and they're paying for it, that's what they're coming here for. And I get the unique perspective of being able to reassure people that actually what you think is the most outrageous, crazy, ridiculous thing that you could ever want, and it's so gross and you can't bring yourself to ask for it, odds are I'm doing it a few times a week because a lot of people are into that and it's way more normal than you would ever imagine.
Do you have any like specific examples that come to mind?
Oh, like foot guys. Foot guys always think that they're like the, oh, scandalous. Like it's just another erogenous zone. Okay.
Because they are shy, right? Like
so shy.
Foot people are at the top of my bucket list. For months, I've been like, I want to go on a date with a white tablecloth and play footsie underneath it. And no one has come forward. No one. And I'm like, why are they so shy? No foot person who like that's their thing. I've had people that are like, no, and I like feet.
Foot guys and guys who are into pegging and prostate play are the two, I think that their personal proclivity is the most outrageous and like something that's unspeakable. And actually like, I feel like it's so much more common than anybody realizes.
I feel because like I hear from so many butt guys. I'm like, no, every guy is a butt guy.
You're just God's favorite.
Well, I think it's because I talk so openly about loving butt stuff. I'm creating a butt chamber.
I like
an asshole chamber, an echoey asshole chamber. I don't know. Any other like things that come to mind about like shamey moments or just stuff that you've been like, no, nah, dude, you're just.
That's,
kinky,
I mean, honestly,
horny.
So much of it. I mean, honestly, the things that I find people are the most ashamed of is anything that kind of subverts the power structure that they're supposed to be adhering to. If they're somebody who's, you know, a lot of people who want to play around with the power dynamics of being a submissive are people who are given too many decisions and too much power on their shoulders in their day-to-day life. And every submissive that I've ever met in my life thinks that what they're into is like shameful or, you know, something that they have to hide from. There's not everyone, but almost all of them that have at least come to me. I'm a biased sample size being somebody.
In the brothel context?
Yes.
Because I imagine in the context, if you're working with someone professionally.
No, if you're at a kink party or a professional, like I know plenty. We know so many proud subs. I'm talking about the clients that come here to scratch that itch.
Got it.
And they are coming here and not asking people in their personal lives because they think that it's something that they can only share with a professional. When in actuality, power dynamics are super common to play with in sex on every level. So,
and yet maybe in their life, it is true that you are the only person who they can talk to. You know, I talk to a lot of people that are like, you're my secret. And I'm like, I'm a podcaster, though.
That's the thing, though, is when you are the secret, you get to keep all of the secrets, too.
Yeah, but you get paid to keep secrets.
I do. It's.
Could you tell us what your sex education was like?
So my school education left a lot to be desired. But my self-education, I'm a millennial. I was raised with the internet to a certain degree after a certain age, at least around sex ed age. So while my official school education wasn't particularly robust, you know, we had resources like Scarletine and things like that.
I don't know what that Scarlet.
It was like an old like website that was just a resource for like safe sex information, reproductive health, all of that. They're the only one because their name was so catchy. They're the only name that's coming to the top of my head. But I had the internet in my house. So
you're
I did
researcher.
A lot of, and I am a researcher who is comforted by knowledge. So I'm like, why is this evil? Let's ask the internet. Oh, the internet.
So from a young age or a younger person, did you ever get a sex talk from an adult you trusted?
Yes, but it was a sex is bad and it ruins the garden and it ruins. It was like some weird analogy about how basically after you have sex, you're completely worthless and why would anybody want to be with you?
You're like, actually, I found the opposite to be true.
Like, wait, wait, wait. People want to do something less, the better I get at it.
It's not logical.
Like,
I happen to know that you also have some pretty intense, amazing professional skills. Like, I've seen you were the first person that I ever saw do double-handed Florentine flogging.
Thank you.
How did you teach that? Was it all self-research? Did you have mentors? Like, what was that process like?
When I was in my wee sex worker days, because I have two periods of my life where I've spent time as a sex worker. This period that we're in is my, you know, it's a pirate's life for me. I am in it to win it. This is the only career I think I'm going to have again. But back when I was 18, I did like a stint from, you know, during college, first dancing and then working at a dungeon. And the dungeon I worked at, Le Salon de Sade, and then later Pandora's Box. But specifically Salon de Sade, when you are somebody who's new to the industry and hasn't done any kind of formal training, they kind of offer mentorship from the other dominants. So while they're taking their sessions, you sit in and you watch their sessions. And if they're feeling like extending grace, they'll share some of their skills for you. There's also a great website, Kink Academy, mm-hmm. where you can, if there's any skills that you feel like you could use some brushing up on or some learning, you can absolutely go on there and watched like detailed videos. I wrote Bondage. I had a couple of books from the Naughty Boys, like some of it self-study, some of it mentorship from other ladies.
And practice.
And practice. Lots and lots of practice.
Can you tell us what health and safety practices you need to feel safe with a lover and maybe kind of delineate between your personal and various professional lives?
So in my personal life, my professional life does tend to bleed into it in the regard that I am very stringent in my health and safety requirements.
But don't you wish we all were in all our personal lives? Like, what would you like to normalize? Sorry for interrupting.
Oh my God. No, I would love to normalize not just STI testing, but I would really love to, and this is going to sound so wrong, so please put on a seatbelt and bear with me. I want to normalize catching STIs, not to proliferate STIs.
Or make super gonorrhea syphilis a thing. Like,
no.
Because super gonorrhea and super chlamydia are becoming a problem because people are like, I can take a pill. It's fine.
But if I had a dollar for the number of times I've spoken to a civilian and they've told me that they're afraid to get tested for something because they're afraid they might have something, which is a logic I'll never understand, but it's a very common logic. Yeah. I know we all got
shame
very familiar
logic.
With it
it's
with
shame
COVID.
Logic.
Yes. And they're afraid of having something or having to tell partners something. If we regarded things like chlamydia, syphilis, hepatitis, things that there could be vaccines for, things that there could be cures for, things that are fixable as something that are shameful to have, people aren't going to be motivated to catch them. Whereas, like, you know, if you're sick and you have a sore throat, you're going to go get swabbed for strep because there's no stigma attached to having strep throat. But there is stigma attached to having, you know, strep pussy.
I thought I had strep throat for 13 of the most miserable days of my life before I got a call from a partner that was like, hey, my dick has sores on it. And then that's when he revealed that he lied to me about his practices and gave me throat herpes because I like deep throating. And every doctor was like, no, couldn't be herpes. No, 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 not possible. No, you'd have to have HIV or be severely immunocompromised to get herpes in your throat. And so I try to talk about that a lot. I'm on suppressive antivirals, but it's like I'm there with you.
Fun fact, as 70% of, you know, adults do, I get occasional cold sores.
80. It's 80. HSV-1 is 80, and I think it's like 20 or 30 for HSV-2. Yeah,
I read a really interesting thing about how they are fairly certain that those numbers are actually much higher. It's
probably
just because
people don't
of
report.
The lack of testing and the high prevalence of asymptomatic and atypically symptomatic cases makes diagnosing it a nightmare because they don't actually test for it in a standard panel.
You have to really ask.
You do because they don't. If you are someone who's asymptomatic, there's no point in prescribing retroviral therapy because that's just an unnecessary strain on, you know, your systems. When if you're not having outbreaks anyway, what's the point? Which I also take suppressive, but actually that's the fun loophole I used. My cold sores is how I was able to get a prescription for valacyclovir, which also works as prophylaxis.
Yeah. My doctor was like, I don't want to prescribe you suppressive therapies unless you're having outbreaks 3 times a year or more. And I was like, sorry, I don't want to get 3 outbreaks a year though. You know, but that's also why I don't eat sugar and I sleep really healthy and all of that. But I digressed you because I would love to hear about your health and safety practices and conversation. So, you were talking about how your professional life influences your personal life.
So in my personal life, I request at any partners that I'm with, not on the same schedule as a porn performer, of course, but I ask that they get, before we have any actual sex, I want them to be tested in the same capacity that I'm tested. So I request a gold standard panel, which is more tests than I can actually name off the top of my head, but it's all the biggies except for herpes because of the risk of overprescription. I also, any of the partners I have, we have open disclosure of risk factors, activities outside of, you know, our own personal relationship, just to make sure that we're making an informed decision based on risk assessment.
When you ask them to get those tests, do you also look at them with your eyeballs? Because lately I've been like, I'd love for you to get tested. And someone's like, I did. And I'm like, could I see? Like, where do you fall on that kind of spectrum?
So I request to see.
Okay, but 2 weeks ago, I had a new lover in my personal life who volunteered. This was one of the hottest things. He was like, I know that you want to use protection today because we're trust building, and that's fine. But I also just wanted to make you feel comfortable, and I wanted to show you my test results from last week. And he brought his computer that had his name on it. So unless he was very good at Photoshop, which I didn't get the vibe this person was, he was like, I even got tested for herpes. And I was like, but then I looked and there were HSV results. And I was like,
well, it is
okay.
Elective. You can get it done.
And he had paid privately out of pocket to do everything, you know, because he's not a AHF Planned Parenthood type of person. You know, he was a dude that was like, I'm prepared.
But he knew. He said, I even got tested for herpes.
Good point.
Which means he knew that that was something that was not included in a standard gold panel STI screening.
Wild. Wild. Okay, so what are safer sex conversations like with you? So you told us about partners. Is there anything else to say about like how you have the conversation or advice for people who might be nervous or maybe how you have it in your professional life? Like you talk to other talent or at the brothel. Like what are the procedures?
Well, with
I know
talent,
I just asked you 5 questions.
It's okay. I can suss out most of them. The easiest one first. With talent, there is no need for a risk assessment conversation because we have QR codes that we can scan on each other's phones that pops up our test results and we can see the date of their last test, the date it was collected, and we can see how much time has surpassed. And then we honestly just say, do you feel like there's any unnecessary risk exposures that you would want to know about if it was from me? And I trust that they would tell me.
So there's
me
still an
like,
element of trust because of the professional container.
Well, and also largely because like, okay, so ethically speaking, I'm supposed to keep my unprotected sex to strictly within the talent pool if I'm getting talent tested and I'm working on a test from Talent Testing or Clear, which is the preferred company that I tend to use. If I then go out, if I get tested at Clear and then I go to a sex party and I have unprotected sex with like 7 people.
Would you
that
do
night,
that at a sex party?
God, no.
Okay, I was like, me neither, but okay.
Oh, good Lord, okay. No. Okay. No. But let's in fantasy world where Jupiter makes poor decisions, but let's say I do that and then I go and I go on set the next day and I'm like, look, I have a fresh test from yesterday. That's unethical of me. I would feel the need to disclose. I went out and I raw dogged seven strangers last night.
But you wouldn't show up to set like that.
Good God, no, no, yeah, no. Yeah. Of course, again, of course not, because my body, there's a standard misconception about the sex industry in that we are harbingers of disease and carriers of STIs and crotch rot and all of that good stuff. All
opposite.
Of the World War II propaganda opposite posters. Is true. But actually, yeah, when making your bills on time requires the functionality of your reproductive system, you are going to make sure that you're in good working order, getting tested, making safe choices, because if you make one risky choice tonight, you might be in financial trouble for 6 months getting out of that hole. So it's actually lower rates of STIs in our community.
It would be so fucking hot if the QR thing were normalized in slutty communities. Is it expensive? Can I ask, is it expensive
God,
to
yes.
do clear?
Okay. Yes. Yeah.
Because there's a pass system, right?
The pass screening tool is specifically for performers.
Right.
So that's not like available to the civilian population.
No,
yet,
but in fantasy world, well, if my life goal is to make the world a sexier, more loving place by bringing that to the public.
No, like, I know. Well, there are companies, I think one of them is Safely, that are actually trying to do something similar. But yeah, in a perfect world, I would love to just have the QR, like we're all tested within a certain amount of time. But it is now that we're also getting tested for MGen and we're getting oral and rectal swabs and the urine and the blood and the everything, I think it's like $250 per test. And the pass standard is 14 days. So every 14, it's about $500 a month.
Holy shit. So you pay it every time. It's not like an unlimited.
Clear does offer an unlimited pass. At least they used to. I don't know if they still do.
Okay.
But even that was, I believe it was $400 or $500 a month as well.
Damn.
So no matter what, you're paying at least $400 to $500 per month for testing to be in the pass system.
But just to tell you guys out there, AHF, you can look up, you can go to freestdcheck.org and you can find places to test online that are accessible to you. Just to say that. Okay. What about health and safety conversations in the brothel? I've interviewed a couple of other ladies and they've shared kind of their procedure, but do you feel like that's a fun thing to share here?
You know, I really take it person by person. Mm-hmm. Of course, I'm very open about the health and safety practices that I take that mm-hmm. are going to impact them during our time together. Things like the fact that any sort of digital penetration or basically anything involving a mucous membrane requires you to wear gloves mm-hmm. if you're going to touch it, wearing dental dams or laurels if we're going to engage in oral sex, using condoms for every sex act. These are things that a lot of people don't do in their personal life, whether they're married or they just – most people don't really use dental dams, even though they should. They really should. But I go over that with every client.
Okay.
And of course, I think we've talked about this before, that we do a health check and
make
sure.
Well, that's what I love hearing about, because I want that to be standard, and I feel like you would be really good at explaining the inspection.
So we do a health check where we just visually inspect genitals, looking for anything that's not supposed to be there, anything atypical, lumps, bumps, cracks, critters, anything oozing out of crevices or holes.
And you squeeze for a clear drop of pre-cum.
Yes.
If it's a penis owner.
If it's a penis owner, we squeeze for, you know, to make, basically you start out, I always ask to see belly button to upper thigh, and we start with a thorough inspection of the abdomen, the sides of the legs, the groin.
And you're looking for bumps, like everything you said.
Exactly.
Crusties.
Anything that is going to be out of the ordinary. Of course, we're also doing this inspection with gloved hands and an alcohol-soaked wipe, so that way if there's anything, any broken skin, we'll be able to tell if there's broken skin, if there's rashes. Unfortunately, the most common cause of a failed inspection is actually yeast, because yeast is transmissible even with just skin-to-skin contact. So we have to be very careful about that, because we are trying to protect both our safety and the safety of all the other clients that would come in to see us. But yeah, we're just making sure everything looks like a textbook diagram visually. Of course, we can't expect everyone to get tested like we are every single week, because
yeah.
we're tested every week.
But they could at least get tested and not have other partners before they come visit you. In a perfect world, I'm just throwing out suggestions.
In a perfect world, they could. But one of the things that I feel like a lot of our clients who come to see us here really appreciate about us is that we are a discreet place
mm-hmm.
for them to go. And if they are in a you know, a committed relationship and they're getting STI tested and it's not part of their routine medical workups, that could run the risk of being less discreet for them. I understand where people, there can be, while I want everyone to get tested regularly, because even monogamous people can have STIs that you can be tested once and they can be dormant. Mm-hmm. And you can get tested again and they only find it a sometime later. So yeah. It's always good to get regular screenings. Yeah. But I also understand why going out of the ordinary might be a red flag in somebody's personal life. And I respect that.
Thank you for all of those details. I love going deep with health and safety, and it's not everyone's wheelhouse, but I also just think the idea of like deeply visually inspecting, to me, that's a turn on. Like, I love looking, and I've definitely freaked partners out looking, but I'm like, if we just started off, you know, because it's like dogs sniffing each other's butts. I'm like, if we just started out being like, you know, I think that's fun.
My favorite thing is when, obviously, it's such a hot scenario. Like, hi, we just agreed to this, and now I'm going to look at your penis and make sure it's up to par. Something about it, the tension, it causes an insta boner in a lot of men, and I adore the really sorry about that. Every time.
They get sorry.
And I'm like, don't be sorry that you're turned on for me. This is wonderful.
Yeah, also, but if you just made an agreement to like go get even more personal, that's so hot.
I know. I love it.
Anything else to say about safer sex in general? I think we covered it pretty good.
Well, I mean, the only thing I really wanted to kind of circle back to is just the normalization of coming down with a crotch cold. I want us as a society, for the best interest of health and safety and the non-proliferation of antibiotic-resistant strains of STIs that we could have cured by now, it would be great if we could normalize our sexual health in the same way that we normalize our respiratory health.
Yeah, and the same sort of care of like, oh, sorry, I have a bad cold. I'm not going to sneeze in your face.
Yeah.
That's what
But other than that, I feel like we got real thorough.
We did real thorough. Okay, so now take us through your personal sexy timeline. Sex life, work life, whatever feels relevant, starting at the very beginning. When do you remember first hearing about sex, and how did we get to the amazing, talented, sexy creature we know today?
Well, I think I've told you before that, like, I kind of grew up in a very religious cult, borderline culty kind of household. So we didn't really have – it wasn't a very free love kind of situation at home, but – I went to college in New York, and when I went to college, I already throughout high school being bisexual but being afraid to come out because I felt that shame and weirdness, I already kind of felt like what I was raised with was maybe not the whole picture.
Okay.
But when I moved to New York and I realized that not only is like sex not shameful and it's like perfectly fine and normal and so long as you're not hurting anybody, it's great, but also things like, you know, alternative sexuality, like kink and public sex and group sex and all of that, so long as it's healthy and not hurting anybody. I mean, it's something that people do in public. It's something that people host parties for. Yeah. And
how did you even learn about this, though? And like, can you say how you knew you were bisexual?
Oh, I mean, I knew I was bisexual as soon as I realized that every time they talked about being gay, I got really nervous.
Okay.
Like, I don't know if that's like
– really?
Yeah. It's hard to like really describe. But like when I was younger, I thought that everybody looked at girls and like
– knew they were beautiful.
And knew they were beautiful and like wanted to like, you know, be their friend. But like really, really be their friend.
Deeply.
Like – deeply. So much. Like, I want to be your BFF so hard.
Okay.
But that it was a little bit different. And I only really put my finger on it when there started being conversations about, like, you know, the abominations of homosexuality. And the first time I heard someone, like, you know, throw out the dyke word, I, like, got, like, even though it wasn't directed at me, it was, like, weirdly, like, I didn't know that I was the target that it would land on, but I felt it land on me.
Shit.
And it felt like it was someone, you know what I mean? Like,
I didn't figure out I liked ladies until I was 25, and that was, like, after I had started sleeping with pussy owners.
Yeah, no, I felt like it's like if you have to ask, is there a problem? There's definitely a problem. It's like that. Like, I was like, I knew I felt like I had to hide how I felt about other girls.
Until you got to New York. Was there a moment of, like, Like, was it a friend group? Was it a, like, how did you get exposed to play parties and kinky things? And,
I mean,
or is it sex work?
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
So some of it was sex work. Okay. Some of it was just the people, because I was like super goth and like, you know, I already kind of knew that I was going to be more myself once I moved to New York. Like, that's why I was so adamant to get out of Ohio when I moved there, is because I wanted to not have to worry about, you know, anyone I know running into me. Like, when you move to a new city, I mean, you can be reborn if you want to be, right. You know. I knew that that was what I was moving for. And then it's just kind of, I met one person who was a fellow weirdo trying to rent a room on Craigslist, and we became friends. And then it just kind of, one party here, one party there, a business card for a dungeon later. And I mean, I'd already been dancing at a strip club. I celebrated my birthday in a strip club, actually, because I was trying to move to New York. And I had a friend of mine who I was like lamenting, because I was working at Taco Bell and just hating my life. And I was just like, man, I need money. I need to make money. I need to make money so I can move to New York. I don't know what I'm going to do. I'll never save up enough to get out of here. And my friend, I'll never forget, she looked at me and she was like, you know, I think I might have an answer for you.
What did you think when she was like, stripping?
Well, my first reaction, actually enough, was like, totally on board, but I'm not hot enough to do that.
Dude,
like, I was like, I'm not hot enough to do that.
I was like, I don't have the skills. And yeah. Then I tried to get them, and that was...
Like, I've seen Coyote Ugly. I'm not that.
Wow. Okay.
You know, that was my response. But then she was like, no, honey, you don't get it. You're already there. You don't have to work out. You don't have to change anything about yourself. You're already hot enough. She taught me the figure eight. She taught me the basics. She had a pole in her house, and she taught me the basics of like, here's how you dance on it. Here's how you climb it. Here's how you do X, Y, Z. And then on my 18th birthday, she took me up to the strip club and like cheered me on while I auditioned, because she already worked at that strip club, and she cheered me on while I auditioned. And that's how I afforded my first car. It's how I afforded my, you know, first like adventuring out into the world. Was, I called it half naked fundraising.
I want to do full naked fundraising.
Ohio has really strict laws. Even back then, they have really strict laws about pole dancing. So, like, you're not even allowed to be naked. You have to have your nipples painted, and you have to wear pasties, or you have to wear, like, panties at all times. So, I'll shake my ass for some college tuition.
I forget that people aren't fully naked. I'm reading a book right now about a burlesque dancer, and they're talking about dancing naked on stage, and they got to the pasties part, and I'm like, oh, there's pasties always, though? I thought they got naked. And I forget that naked means different things. So would you say that you already identified, like, had you been having sex at this point, like partnered sex or exploring your own body at this point? Like,
I mean, yes. I had a little bit of what I considered sex. I had a boyfriend in high school.
Did you feel confident about sex? Or like, because for me, I was like, I couldn't do stripping. I'm not good enough. And like, I don't know, you know, what was your feeling about it? You were just like, all right, I'm doing it. And then you bought a car.
I was here for it largely because I, like I said, I was a goth chick, you know, like from, I'd say around like 14 is when I started buying my clothes from like Hot Topic and like Chainlink Addiction, which was like the local like goth punk store.
Okay.
So like I would show up to, you know, school in like garters and like fishnets and all sorts of crazy stuff. Okay. I've got great pictures from back in
the
day.
Were you a goth stripper or did you go?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay. I've got some fun pictures. And it was way before it was like a thing. Like they used to make me paint my tattoos. There was one, I had bright pink hair, and there was the one strip club in Ohio that used to make me wear a freaking wig. It made me look like Glenn Danzig. It was so stupid.
Wait, who? I don't know who that is.
He's the lead singer of the Misfits. It's not a good look. Anybody out there who got it, like, it's not a good look. But, you know, things are much easier these days for the alternative ladies. But yeah, like, I was already so used to being sexualized because even at like 14, 15, walking down the street on my way to school carrying a backpack, I was being sexualized already. I had, you know, people catcalling and men trying to offer me rides and things like that. And I figured if I'm going to be sexualized, I might as well be able to pay my rent with it.
And be in charge of it.
Yeah. I mean, taking agency of my own sexualization is, I think, the largest single factor in how I got to -9, because it's the combination of sexy sin eater, everything is normal. Literally everything is normal. The most upstanding members of society have something real weird they're into.
Unless you're in pain, probably normal. And unless you're choosing the pain on purpose, you know what I mean?
I was gonna say, unless you really like the pain.
Well, that's a chosen pain. Emily Nagoski of Come As You Are says that, you know, probably normal unless you are physically in pain and you're not choosing it.
Oh, yeah. No, of course. Yeah. Intentional pain is different from unintentional organ pain.
So speaking of intentional pain, did going to the dungeon overlap with stripping? Was it separate? Did you understand you were kinky before dungeon? Did dungeon teach you how to be kinky? Was it a whole chaos circle?
It's kind of a little bit of a chaos circle, but there really wasn't much, if any, overlap between the strip club and the dungeon, because when I moved to New York, I still kept dancing for a little bit, but my workload at school was kind of outrageous, especially for having to work as much as I did. And also, if you can't tell, I'm a very dramatic individual. And the one thing I really loved about stripping and that made it a fun job, even the nights that it was a slog, was that I could pick my own music and I could go up on stage and, you know, make a little stage show and attract attention or at least have fun up there. Yeah. And in New York, all of the strip clubs, it's the same thing as kind of in most of the clubs in Las Vegas, where it's just like 5 stripper poles and everybody's up on stage at the same time. So it's an endless loop of and I hated it because it didn't feel like theatrical. It literally took it from feeling like a low rent burlesque dancer to,
or arguably high rent, because they make way more money than burlesque.
But the outfits are cheaper.
It's true. And less work to make.
God bless.
Yeah.
But it kind of removed so much of the joy from stripping that when I got introduced to BDSM as a job, I was like, oh yeah, because then I have complete creative control over the entire experience and I'm still monetizing my sexualization, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. So is that where you learned, you said you like impact play. So is that where you like learned about it most? And then can you tell us your favorite types of impact?
So working in the dungeons is how I learned that I enjoy, you know, that dynamic and I enjoy that atmosphere. And I really do like impact play and having that control over someone. But it wasn't until, honestly, years later that I got into porn and realized that I enjoy receiving it as well. So that there's actually about almost a decade in between learning about safe impact zones and implements and all of those important things with impact play.
As a top.
And then almost a decade in between before I would try out, you know, any implement I'm going to use on a sub or a bottom, I'm going to try on myself first that I can have an idea of how it, you know, feels on the skin, but never had I, you know, taken on that role as a bottom until years later.
Okay. I mean, I would imagine too, with all of that experience, it would require a professional or a very, very, very knowledgeable nerd to be able to hold satisfying space for you.
Yeah, I mean, a little bit. Yeah. It's a lot. I'm a lot to keep up with at this point in my life.
So what are your favorite types of impact?
I like slapping, stinging, whippy.
Giving.
I love flogging, even though it's not particularly extreme. I do really enjoy flogging.
Yeah, I'm really good at it.
Thank you. I also really enjoy spanking, you know, paddling, like basically anything that lets me kind of almost like edging. I really do, because I have been told by some, and I'd like to consider myself fairly good at reading other people's energy and where they're at in the moment in terms of how close they are to, you know, I like pushing the boundaries, never breaking the boundaries, never getting right up against them. But I like any play that allows me to play long enough to kind of like ease up and back on that boundary.
And as a submissive, I really like it when a top wants to take me to my edge. Maybe I need to mercy, but I don't want to fully break. Like, I still want to feel proud that I got stretched and tried something new. You know, like when someone is just like doing, you know, like with my former dom at the end, it was like boop, boop, boop. And I was like, but my experience, where's my experience? Can I also say I have seen you use a single tail amazingly.
Like, thank you.
How did you learn that? Like, that's a special skill.
Practice makes perfect.
How did you decide, like, what order of toys to get? Was it just, like, how did they come into your life? Or is it?
Well, So the single tail, I actually, truth be told, when I use a single tail in session, I know you've seen this before. I only crack it to scare them. I never actually use it as a full extended whip with a client
Okay.
because I still don't consider myself skilled enough with a single tail, even after well over a decade of practice with it. I do not have enough faith with me and my one good eye that I am going to have the aim that's enough to not potentially inflict damage on someone. So anytime I'm using a single tail, it's always doubled over. I'm not going to brag about skills that I don't have. I am good with using a whip. I'm very great at show whipping and, cracking it, scaring people, all of that good stuff. I don't use a single tail just on a, I'm not at that level. I have so much awe, and I would love to someday. I actually, before the pandemic, I had paid for a workshop to go and hone more of my whip skills, among other things. And unfortunately, it had to get canceled and refunded.
Okay,
So I
okay.
never got to do it. But that's actually on my list of like, someday I will feel confident that I won't be a risk to my play partner to use a single tail on flesh. But right now I use the crack as psychological fear, like put them in the zone of, uh-oh, bad things are happening. But it's good things.
Okay, so how did we get from working as a pro dom to a professional porn actress and legal brothel courtesan?
So we actually take a wild left turn. I actually got completely out of the sex industry, not because I was like, oh, I'm done with the sex industry, but just because I wanted to go to Europe after I got done with college. So I went overseas, and it was just supposed to be a 3 to 6 month backpacking trip. As soon as I realized that I could make money just by singing with my guitar,
That's so hot.
it was so hot. Oh, Berlin, but as soon as I realized that, I was like, oh, tough. Screw going back to the US. I'm staying here. And I stayed overseas for like 5 years, entirely just traveling around and playing music for a living.
Did you bang people along the way?
I did, actually. That was in my like, so one of my top kinks that I didn't list because I don't have to speak about it publicly because it gets satisfied all the time in my job. One of my top kinks is casual sex with strangers. I love having sex with strangers. And it's not like, it doesn't have to be hot strangers. I mean, like I take them big, I take them small, I
Well,
take
there's
them young, I
hot.
take them
There's
old.
different
There's
types
all
of
different kinds
hot.
of hot,
You
and
mean like
scenarios are hot.
meeting the strangers out in the world?
Yeah, like I love banging strangers. It's like a thing that I actually haven't had like random hookup sex with a stranger in the longest time because I get that kink so thoroughly fed here. But I did that a lot in Europe.
Wait, like right away? Because I met someone on the street last week for the first time, and then like 5 days later, I spent all day fucking them, and it was so hot. And it was like, it's the cutest meet cute I've had in a minute, especially since I've had my boundaries up since. I mean, I imagine you get, I already get dozens of inquiries weekly and monthly. I can only
Yeah.
imagine what makes its way to your inbox, but you still find it satisfying to go like discover a rando?
Yeah, I love that. I mean, I got correctly mistaken for a sex worker. They were right, but I was off the clock. I
Right.
wasn't working. I stayed at a hotel here in Vegas that will
Yes, but
remain,
no.
they'll remain nameless because I don't believe in trashing businesses online, but I stayed at a hotel here with my best friend for a few days, and my best friend is a boy, and he went back to Ohio, and I still had another night at the hotel. So I was like, I'm gonna get some strange. So I went out, I met a cutie, invited him up to my room, and like the brazen harlot I am, and the sex was not amazing. I feel bad. I made him feel a little bad, but I thought he was gonna be a communicator. Anyway, not gonna get distracted. After I left, after I checked out, there was a $500 charge on my bill for towels that they needed to replace.
What?
A $500 charge for towels. And I was like, what on earth? And I called and they wouldn't give any explanation. And it had to be explained to me by one of the less clueless women in the industry that they charged me $500 as like a, yeah, they saw you go up to your room with two different dudes and the one dude you picked up at the bar in a casino. They assumed you were working as a freestyler. They charged you so you wouldn't come back.
Fucking hate that. I'm like, literally, fucking Spotify, I'm following the rules.
I would just
Like,
like to have it on the record that I was not being a whore. I was being a slut. I was being a
yeah,
slut, not a whore. God damn it. There is a
there's a
distinction.
distinction. Dude, and you go out of your way to do things
I
legally.
do. No, I seriously, I sleep very soundly at night. There is only legal activities on my roster. I would never casino freestyle. I would never restaurant freestyle. I would never, you know, that's just, I'm too scared for that. I'm very murderable.
I don't have the social skills.
I'm very arrestable, very murderable. Thank you, but no thank you. Decrim for all. Anyway.
Okay, so Europe and now, but now you're here.
So yeah, anyway, was about 5 years in Europe. I came back here to the United States. I actually planned to emigrate to Europe, but my grandfather got sick and I was the only person who was, you know, feasibly available to step in and help take care of him. So I spent about 7 years off and on being his caretaker. And 2 years before he passed away, I was just bartending, waitressing. That way I could have a regular schedule and, you know, less to explain while I was caretaking. But after he passed away, it was like, well, getting a boob job and doing porn. But what led me to the brothel was actually a Cracked article. I had been completely out of the sex industry for years, and I was already thinking like, okay, next moves. I don't want to be a bartender for the rest of my life. All of the trades are really sexist. You know, what can I do that's going to make me happy? And the important part, something is different every day so that I don't get so bored and understimulated that life isn't fun anymore. And I read this Cracked article about being a legal courtesan, and I was like, oh, sold. And I applied on a whim, thinking it was going to take them months. I got hired within 24 hours, and I've been here ever since. Wow. Yeah.
And then you started doing porn after?
Yeah. And that's why I said I had to backtrack and really think about it, because I was here for about 2 years before I did porn. I actually didn't start doing mainstream porn until after the pandemic, but I got into porn largely because of a client that I had here. I miss her.
I love her.
She was delightful. Absolutely, like, just excellent conversationalist. And that's not a euphemism. She was just really fun to talk to, among other things. But she had a favorite porn star since age. And she was like, I would love for you to make a video with her. Would you be willing to? And I was like, sure. Because I had made a couple of clips, like, you know, nothing serious. Just like, you know, I'm going to pee in the woods. Like fetish clips. And I was like, sure. But this lady is a legend. There's no way she's going to film with me. Well, she said yes. And I shot with her, and she was like, dude, you're really good at this. You should do more of this. And I did one more film in February of 2020, right before the shutdown. And that film got not only my second project ever, got nominated for an AVN. So
cool.
I know.
Oh, but during the pandemic year?
Yeah. So I got to go to my first AVN as a nominee, but it was from my couch.
Damn.
Yeah, that was kind of a bummer. But
did you masturbate then? No. In the privacy of your... Okay.
No, I was on a live stream with the rest of the crew that had made that movie.
Uh-huh.
So
it... Not a turn on in the same way.
I wasn't trying to like... Okay. I feel like that would have been kind
no, that's an important
yucking
piece
everyone's
of context.
Yum.
Yeah, no, a, that's an important piece of context.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I will say I was so happy I could have jilled off. But that was all I need, like kind of the sign I needed from the universe. Like, oh, bitch, you are good at this. And again... Fake titties and a porn agent. And now here we are.
Amazing.
I just wanted to backtrack and make it very clear that as much as I make jokes about, you know, got fake tits and got a porn agent, you don't need fake tits to get a porn agent. I just want to throw that out there. Natural boobs are great too. You don't
so
need them to be successful
saying,
in porn.
So you're saying there's
all
hope?
Boobs. I'm saying all boobs are good boobs.
I agree.
All boobs are good boobs. No such thing as bad boobs. Do you have boobs? They're good. I promise you.
But specifically in this room, what are you saying about mainstream porn?
I'm just saying I would watch 10 out of 10 would stream.
Okay, so like how has it been? Turn-ons, turn-offs, sexiest parts of your job, least sexy parts of your job. Like what have you learned about pleasure in general and in your own body? Literally. And less literally.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I kind of already touched on the fact that, like, I didn't realize that I liked receiving impact play mm-hmm. until recently. And by recently, I mean within the last, like, 3 years or okay. so. And that is 100% because of this job, because I realized I had a freakishly high pain tolerance. And I was in a movie where it was like, well, can we whip you and cane you and stuff like that? And I was like, let's try it.
That was your first
time? I'm curious. Yeah, my first time getting caned was on film. Yeah, I like to have my first
that's
on film.
A lot. Well, I'm wanting to do my own personal bucket list. I mean, I've done a lot of things, but I want to document everything just because I'm curious and I get turned on by that. And it is so hot to me that your firsts are like not just documented, but you got paid to document them.
Like, yeah, my very first, like, my first DP scene, like, on kink.com is my first DP, like, period.
I still haven't had my first DP, so maybe that's...
Can recommend, yeah.
What can you tell us about it? Like, how much, like, what do you remember about it? Were you nervous? Had you done anal before?
Not with a real dick.
Really?
Yeah.
What? So did you know how to prepare? Were you just, like, learning? Like, what? And because my understanding is camera preparation is a whole other level even from personal play.
I have the gift/curse of constipation, so that wasn't as big. The prep wasn't as big. That wasn't my concern. I can't poop when I want to, so wasn't really afraid that I was going to poop on my co-stars. Like, that was not a concern. But the bigger concern for me was just that, like, I was afraid that I might, you know, because these guys, we're not talking, like, normal, like, you know, neighborhood bar dicks. We're talking, like, the NBA of, you know, swordsmanship here. Like, these are penis professionals.
Yeah.
So, like, I was a little bit afraid of, like, tearing or bleeding or hemorrhoiding or anything like that. But no, these guys were great professionals. Answer is just buckets of lube and, you know, taking the time to warm up. But, like, yeah, I discovered that my butthole's a gymnast.
That's so cool. I have an inflatable butt plug I haven't used yet. Have you ever used one?
No, I have graduated. I've started playing with graduated butt plugs. And then I found, like, I have, like, a pegging toy that is, like, very hyper realistic dick, but, like, it's, like, kind of like a lot of real dicks. It's smaller at the end than it is at the base, so, like, you can kind of, like, work it in and work it up. And, like, John Strong, like, amazing at what he does. Like, I was, like, mostly worried about, again, being able to take dicks, and also, like, what if I fall off? Like, what if I'm, like,
what do you mean fall off?
Like fall off the dick? Because, like, well, I'm not going to show you right now because there's a microphone. Yeah, yeah. But, like, there's, like, only really two positions that you could – three, really, that you can, like, really effectively get DP'd at in for the camera, because they need to be able to see.
Right.
And that is either you in doggy style, which is less comfortable because of the angles. Or essentially missionary, although I don't think the missionaries would approve.
New missionary. Well, you're a trailblazing trollop.
Should we call that the backslide? But where you're, like, laying back, so you're balancing on someone's torso with their dick in your butt.
That's what my partner, who teased me, he was like, I would be the base, and then we'd have someone else on top of you. And I was like, yeah.
Dude didn't let me fall at all. And even though he had, like, the biggest dick of, like, as I recall, he had one of the biggest dicks on set, like, which he also, like, was very, like, accommodating, because I was very open about, like, this is my first anal scene. All those guys were great. But,
that's
like,
so hot.
He's the one who, like, I balanced on and didn't get dropped. So, like, eternal
love.
So he's
laying down?
Yeah, laying down and, like, kind of, like, holding my legs up to make sure that I'm, like, balanced while I'm, like, you know.
So you're the opposite direction on him? I'm trying to imagine this.
Yeah, like, it's, like, my back on his stomach. Laid back.
Okay. Like, sitting in his lap.
Sitting in his lap, essentially, but then laying down with, like, on top.
Okay.
So that he can have dick and butt and guys can come up. Because, again, it was a six
multiples?
Guy.
Multiples?
It was my first anal was a six guy DP gangbang for kink.com.
So he stays in the back?
Yeah.
And then others just come
take
in?
Take turns
coming
God. In.
Did they line them up by size? That's one of my greatest fantasies.
Not that I recall.
Oh, I want to tell that. Not to I be a size that, thing, but just because I
like
think.
Like the Matryoshka dolls of, like, dicks? I love that.
Or even base size. Like, I don't care. Either way, like, I love to line stuff up. I find it so satisfying. So, like, I'll line up papers and napkins. And I think so often about, like, lining up dicks and pussies and just pleasuring them or being used by them.
I love it. It's like slutty autism.
So you have that in real – I mean, it is.
Yeah, it's really slutty autism. I love it. Can relate.
Are there other firsts on camera that you have experienced, or like?
Yes, I learned what frotting is on camera.
I want to take pictures.
I got to frot. Yeah,
you got to wait. Got to, like, facilitate it.
Yeah, I got to be the frotter.
Remind, because it is one foreskin going over the other dick. Or?
So frotting is essentially like ducking or sword fighting, right. Where like the foreskin doesn't have to be over it. Essentially, a hand job. In between two dicks where they're like...
Oh, maybe, like, I don't know what frotting... I thought frotting was two dicks, at least one of them has a foreskin, and the foreskin goes over the other dick, and then that's...
Yeah, no.
So you can do it with your own hands and toys.
It's like a Chinese finger trap with dicks.
Oh my God, that's so fun. But you use your own hands.
But you use your hands, yeah.
Oh my
God. Or like your mouth.
I want to do that with all sensations. Yeah. You're making my bucket list even
really
bigger.
Fun. Oh, it was a good time.
That's that
was
really cool.
Yeah, Biphoria.
Did your hands get tired? First. Did you have to practice hands?
No. Trust me, they kept me busy doing other things. Like the hands didn't have a chance to get tired. That was just one facet of like.
Yeah, yeah. What else?
It was a full devil's three-way. Although there was no DP in that scene. Because that was
not
so,
every devil's three-way has to have a DP.
No, I know. But the fun one. Like,
have you ever had a DP and a cock in your mouth or just a spit roast?
Same scene. Yeah. The kink.com scene. Yeah. It was for Savage Gangbang. So like, yeah. Which they call that airtight is when it's like all three holes. Yeah.
Oh. Airtight. I thought it had a different name. What's Eiffel? Oh, Eiffel Tower is just when they high five over you. Okay. Can you tell us about the like social aspects of being a porn performer? Have you met them before? Do you talk at all? What's the vibe? I'm sure it's different set to set. I've heard it's different set to set.
I have actually still been figuring that out myself. I actually found out if you're a porn performer who I worked with in the first like 3 months of my time in the industry, you probably think I was trying to fuck you off camera because I didn't know that like inviting like, oh, hey, do you want to go grab food? Or like inviting someone out is like a no-no. Like,
oh, it is.
Yeah, I guess
Thank
so.
You for
I don't know.
Me just in case.
I'm still figuring it out. But in general, like, it's a very professional. Like, you shouldn't like ask somebody like out afterwards unless everybody's going to do
but
something.
But when I'm a professional photographer and I'm working with other photographers, on, like when I was working EDC in Vegas, like we always would get food together. But I guess it's the context.
Again, it's the whole group.
Because the job. No. Yeah. It was just the two of us.
Oh, okay. I don't know. But I feel like I'm still figuring it out. But I was informed that basically I might have made a bunch of people think that I was trying to bang them. So which, like, I mean.
There are additional layers of social confusion because the job is sex, maybe.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And I'm still kind of dissecting some of that because I've never been super great at like social cues and like reading the subtext of how I'm supposed to behave.
So
I'm just like friendly. Like I want to be everyone's friend and I don't buy into that whole like if you're a boy like or presenting as a boy and I'm presenting like
gender,
then we must be
also,
trying
to be
romantic. Yeah, no, seriously. I was scissoring before I was sucking dick. Not actually scissoring though because I didn't realize that that's actually a thing until porn. And it's fun. I always thought that scissoring was a lie. And
or just something to be done with Barbies.
Or for Barbies. But no. Like, that's actually, it's so done hot. If positioned correctly.
Tell us the correct position.
Oh, it's different for everyone. It's all about, like, you have to, like, squish in there and figure out whether are we going to be doing, like, a Captain Morgan vibe? Are we going to be doing, like, side to side? Everybody is different, and it's all about, like, where you are at that makes that perfect contact. But, like, when you find it.
Is there anything? Okay, well, first, is there anything else we need to know? And then are there any things that you haven't done yet that you want
to
do?
All you need to know is everything. But
all you need to know is you could probably find it all online to really find the comprehensive.
Oh, yeah. No. But sometimes I look at the Pornhub views and I'm like, really? Damn.
What about in brothel life? Are the turn-ons, turn-offs different there? I'm sure there's like a lot of overlap. You're holding space instead of having other people like hold space for you. So like what's the hottest parts of that for you?
So,
I mean, stranger sex, we got that.
Stranger sex is always great, but also there is a dynamic at the brothel that's not present anywhere else I've ever had sex. And that is I am curating a sexual experience solely for the pleasure of somebody else, which one, I'm very reciprosexual. I'm turned on by turning people on.
I've never heard that term. How have I not? I am.
It's a good one, right?
Yeah.
I can't take credit for it. A really cute ginger boy that I banged a while ago had that.
I've been
like,
all like, I have responsive desire, you know, which is the reciprosexual.
Reciprosexual,
I'm
going
to say that.
But I'm super turned on by what, like, turns people on. Like, I have gotten flooded wet at a dude who was putting his dick in a literal, not Acme vacuum. What's the ones? The Kirby vacuums. This man had his own dedicated sex Kirby.
We just heard from someone who has a dedicated sex vacuum. I wonder if it's
Wait
Bunters
a minute.
Bunters.
If
is it Bunters Bunters?
Did you used to go to La Salon de Sade and did
we'll
you hire
out.
Two girls
we'll
to throw
out.
Pillows at you and say mean things while you put your dick in a Kirby? Because if you are, I have loved you for years. You're one of my favorite people because that was one of the best fucking parts. Soaking wet. It was great. We just literally yelled mean names at him and threw, like, we ended up, like, throwing, because it was, like, a humiliation thing. We were, like, throwing pillows at him and, like, making jokes. He was so happy. And, like, again, I've never seen human meat do that. It was so good because it was great. But, yeah, no. I would be happy with either outcome, either A, the same man with a dedicated sex Kirby is one
multiples.
Of your fans, or we live in a world where there are again, it goes back to however random you think your sexual proclivity is, there is someone else out there, and there was probably lots of other people out there who find it to be completely normal. And it is completely normal. You're not hurting that Kirby. That Kirby is doing its job. It was designed to do that. Okay.
Suck.
But yeah, no, I want to live in a world where there's multiple people who have dedicated sex Kirbys. It would explain how they're still selling those at the price point, to be honest.
Wait.
Kirbys are expensive.
Really?
Yeah.
I haven't done that. But now I am. I was literally just fantasizing because I've been playing with pussy pumps lately. And I'm like, wait, I could put a vacuum on there. I don't know if it would be a good idea. But
the Kirby's real strong. I'd be careful.
Well, right. That's what I was thinking about. Like, I was like, would it cut my lips? Don't want to. Okay. So you mentioned your wetness. And I happen to have a little bit of foreknowledge that you're a very wet person.
Oh, yeah. No. It's okay. It is a miracle of nature that I have no control over. But yes, I am outrageously moisturized down there by nature.
And like, do you have to make a special effort to hydrate or?
No, no. If I get turned on, it's just a waterworks. Wow. Like my Linda Lovelace moment in porn was for the set of Four Finger Club 29 from New Sensations. I got fisted and everybody on like set was like, because while that is the theme of the movie, they were expecting to cut to get me a bottle of lube before I got fisted, but it was definitely not necessary. Looking like that scene in The Matrix where Neo wakes up in the pod, because my co-star was really hot. So,
that's amazing. Yeah. Look, I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm good.
Yeah, no. So yeah, no, that was like my Linda Lovelace moment though. Like I've been known to like soak through, like I have to be careful like what color like pants I wear. Like if I'm going somewhere where like I might get horny, like I will have like it looks like a sweat stain.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's so hot. Do you have fans who come find you at the brothel to see you? Is that a thing that happens? Is that weird? Is that fun?
Yeah. I get both ways where I get people who come to see me because they're fans of my work and I love that. It makes me feel like a slutty celebrity.
That's amazing. You are.
Thank you.
You literally are.
Thank you. It feels very disconnected because I only remember that that's the case like when I go to like conventions or like when someone comes here and they're like, oh my God, I love your work. And I've also had a lot of people who come here and then they meet me and then they go on to follow my work.
That's hot.
And be like, oh my God, I can't believe that I didn't know about this. That's awesome. Yeah. So like, yeah, it goes both ways. But I love when people who are fans of my work come and see me in person. Like what better way to show you appreciate me.
Yeah. And I know that you have like shepherded many first timers into the realm of sex. Do you have either advice for virgins or like favorite things about like being with a brand new newbie?
I mean, not just virgins. I don't know what I would call it, but I'm really turned on by being somebody's guide to something new.
Yeah.
I don't know what the name for that would be, but I really, like, it's not even being turned on. It's, like, the joy. Because there is a very specific joy with having your fantasies met for the first time. Whether that is, you know, being addressed in a way that you've never been addressed before, but that you've always wanted to hear from a beautiful woman's mouth. Or whether it is trying something that you've only ever watched in video. Like, the joy that I see in people's faces that I get to, like, live in the moment with them is, like, unparalleled. And, like, it is a turn on, but it's more so like a fulfillment and like of both sexual and like emotional purpose, if you will.
Yeah.
Like it feels really impactful. Yeah.
So what like fantasies or role plays have you not tried? I know you've been a stepmom.
I was just talking about this. I've seen more than my fair share of single women at the brothel. And I've seen more than, you know, more than my fair share of couples at the brothel. I have never had a lesbian couple come to see me at the brothel. And I want so bad in every way because there's something so hot about working, like, with couples because that's where I feel like I learn the most new things about sexuality is when it's almost like being like Jane Goodall, you know, like getting to see sexuality in the wild because it's like, it's not performative sexuality, like what I'm seeing on set, you know, it's actual, the real sexuality that these couples have felt out for themselves over the course of a real and, you know, extended relationship. And I just love getting to come along for like those rides because those are people that know each other's bodies. And I've seen so many unique approaches to making people come. I would love, 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 please, please, lesbian couples, come say hello. That's like the one like bucket list that I've not had here at the ranch that I would just adore.
Cross off her bucket list fantasies. Damn. What would you say is the skill or quality that you have that makes you a great lover?
My communication skills. I truly feel like there's no such thing as being bad at sex. There's just being bad at communicating with sexual partners. Mm. And I am fairly gifted as a communicator in general. And that doesn't stop once my clothes come off. And I feel like that is, you know, my ability to communicate paired with my willingness to communicate about sex while the sex is happening, because that's what a lot of people are afraid to do. They can only talk about sex once the sex is not happening and it's in a sanitized environment. But you can have conversations about whether or not you're enjoying sexuality in the moment. Yeah. And if the answer is no, it doesn't have to be, oh, well, okay, and putting your pants on like a certain gentleman at a certain casino that upcharged me.
What a terrible, overall terrible experience.
Bad communication. Bad communicators.
Because and you got charged for towels.
When I said not really, when you asked if it was great, the answer should have been, how can we do better? Yeah. Not to put your pants on. Anyway, but that's my point, though, is that communication is what makes for great sex. And I think that that is a gift I have in most arenas, is communicating.
What are your hopes for your sexual and or professional future?
For my own personal career, I just hope that I make enough of my own empire that I get to be a resource and a comfortable human for all of my days, and that that can be true for all of the people I care about in my life. Yeah. But for the world at large, I mean, I hope that we are at the beginning of an era where sex work is accepted and that everybody realizes that somebody they love is a sex worker and that almost everybody they love indulges in the, you know, wares of a sex worker, whether it's online or in person. And I'd love to see, you know, a country where we have at least laws that are on par with the rest of the industrialized world. At my core, I'm a harm reductionist. I feel like, you know, you can't change the status quo if you don't survive the status quo. And I would love to see a future where we are accepted and appreciated for who and what we are.
I fucking love that. If you could wave a magic wand and teach everyone in the world something about sex, what would it be?
Lubricant and needing lubricant is not indicative of amount of arousal. Like, I feel like if there's one thing that I wish everybody knew is that everyone needs lube, whether you're playing by yourself or playing with a partner.
Even you, you're very wet. I still need lube.
I am a fountain. Like, I literally drip. I had to change my pants on the last, like, hike I went on because I thought of something hot. And they were like those like army green, you know, the shorts I'm talking about, the army green shorts. I had a black splotch of like, not like black, but like darker green. I had to literally change my pants. I will soak through my pants. I have to grab lube because after a couple of orgasms, my body naturally says, okay, so the sex is done. You had your orgasm. And if you had an orgasm, he definitely did. So the body stops production of these really important things because it assumes that sex is over. I need lube. I still want more sex, even if, you know, there's so many different factors.
But I get vigorous. I sweat. I get dehydrated. Also, I want to say the phrase hot harlot hike. Hot, wet harlot hike.
that part. And also, I side note that most people, when they're talking about lube, are so focused often when we talk about lubricant being normalized between partners. A lot of men, and not just men, but penis-having humans, all penis-havers, don't realize how important using lubricant is to your overall ability to orgasm with partners. Because if you're not using personal lubricant with your personal play, your body is going to be very used to a higher level of friction than your partners are going to provide, and you're not going to have orgasm. So Using lube when you masturbate makes you have better sex when you're not fucking Palmela and her five sisters.
Love it. Love it, Palmela and her five sisters. I love it. You're so good at words. If you could go back in time and give younger you a piece of sex advice, understanding that everything unfolded perfectly to be where we are today, what age or ages would you pick and what would you say?
I would go to like 13-year-old me, who is like, I mean, I'm still a big smelly dork, but now I'm aware of the fact. Well, yeah, but like I am a metaphorical smell.
I see.
Not okay. Metaphorical, but what's the word I'm looking for?
I think metaphorical.
Figurative.
Oh, yeah.
Smelly. Not a literal smelly.
Figurative smelly dork.
Figuratively smelly dork. But I would love to just tell me to call, go back. I always wish I could send myself postcards, but just calm your titties. Mm. The boys, you're like the boys, the girls, the everybody, you're going to have a great time. You're going to turn out hot and it's all going to be fine. Mm. Just calm your titties and stress less. There was a whole like 6 months I didn't touch my computer because I looked at porno on my home computer and I was afraid if I touched it that it was going to somehow tell on me. That's a whole different story.
Oh, wow.
But that's a real one. Damn. Did not touch my home computer for like months. Damn. It might have even been longer than that. It was forever I didn't touch my computer because I was so afraid if I turned it on because my stepdad worked in networking. So like he could like see what I did on my computer, but not on my computer. So I was like, if I turn it on, they can see. I didn't know that that's not how hard drives work. They could see it even if it wasn't on. But oh my God. And yeah, like I lived in fear of like getting caught out. And like, yeah, man, just calm your titties. Like, don't worry about the boys or girls who like you. Don't worry about whether or not it's going to be found out that you like sex, because that's the only reason the human race is here, is because everybody likes sex.
Exactly.
It's like, we literally wouldn't
creativity,
exist.
Our original creativity. We all have it. We all have a relationship with sex. We all got born from it. Fantasy brainstorm time. If... Oh, well, this question doesn't really work for you.
Oh, no. What
well,
is it?
I'll change it. If you had to be a different kind of sex worker for 2 years minimum. This is the new, you turn 18 and this is the service you provide in my dictatorship.
Okay.
What other type of sex worker would you be?
You know, just because of how, you know, I've been told by a lot of people like that work here. And if you look at my reviews on the website, I swear to you, I don't write my own reviews. Like, but they all say the same thing again and again and again and again and again.
If you wrote the same thing over and over, that would be a bad business practice.
Fair enough. Writing your own reviews. But I feel like when it's like really repetitive, like, you know, like I swear, but like they all say the same thing, which is that like, I immediately, something about the way I carry myself and interact with people makes people comfortable, and it makes them feel like they've known me for a lot longer than they have. And it gets described often as, you know, it feels like hanging out with an old friend that you just haven't seen in a while. And I feel like, I mean, if I wasn't doing what I do right now, I mean, I would probably, very similar to what I do right now, I'd probably look into like professional cuddling and like, you know, therapeutic like cuddle sessions, just because my favorite things involve affirming that you're normal, you're okay, and nothing is wrong with you. And if I'm doing that while we're spooning, all the better.
I love that. I tried to be a cuddler. Cuddle Comfort took my profile down because they found my OnlyFans.
They're real whorephobic. They're whorephobic.
I didn't realize it.
Yeah, they don't understand like, that whores have boundaries. Like,
I'm not here to be a, what?
Okay. It's like I told the guys at, you know, the casino, like, I am a whore, but not here.
Yeah.
I'm a whore in Pahrump. Okay. It's an hour away. You can get a limo here. I highly recommend driving yourself because you do want to check out our winery and have as much flexibility in your time with me as you possibly can, but not a whore on the strip. Not a whore anywhere but here. Only place I'm a whore. We can have boundaries. I can cuddle and I can restrain my harlotty ways. Like I can...
I thought you were going to say phone sex operator because your voice is so sexy.
I've been a phone sex operator.
Oh, that makes sense.
I've also been a phone psychic.
You have?
Yes.
In your perfect world, what bucket list item of yours would you like me to help you cross off? I guess if I had a girlfriend, I could bring her and – but besides that.
Yeah. There's a lot on that list. I feel like I would be able to do this fantasy with you because you're somebody who I do very deeply trust with my safety. I would love to do like a sensory deprived, like forced orgasm scenario someday. I've just never felt safe enough like with partners that it would be like a, we could do this.
Oh, that's
but
hot.
Like I have a fantasy, and mind you, it ties into a few other fantasies for sure because there's multiple ways to do it. But I've always kind of like been turned on at the idea of like almost like free use, but like, you know, I'm kind of like, you know, the, oh, that's just the slut tied to the bed.
Ooh.
And then like, you know, that. Like, I don't know, like when someone's going to come over and like give me an orgasm or not. Like, that sounds really hot.
The slut tied to the bed is our little toy today. So right? We're going to play with it. And yeah, like, we're just going to, but we have to make it feel good. Oh, this toy? This is a squirting toy. This is my human squirt gun.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, fun activities for afternoon tea. Just like, you know, a good afternoon of being like a slut strapped to the bed. It sounds like fun. It. Yeah.
All right, I'll add it to my bucket list.
Hey.
And lastly, you have an unlimited budget to build your perfect playroom or dungeon or castle or whatever you want. What would it be like?
I've already told you about this. I have a dream of a magical forest glen. I think of it kind of as like the Hex, you know? It's roughly based on the shape of the brothel, but I would like to have a campground, first and foremost. A, for the most part, vanilla campground. Like, it has families, people who come hang out, you know, graduations, all that, you know, totally normal. But at the back of the property, there is a very tall fence that is dotted by, I'd say maybe 5 or 6 or 8 houses, small houses with different themes, you know, big open spaces, of course, but different themes, maybe a medical room, maybe an orgy pit room, maybe this one's the classroom. And in between, big open space, just a nice like courtyard in the center. You know, so we have privacy with the fence in between the houses, but also privacy in between the houses, not just one house. And kind of have like an adults only section to this campground where you can film there. I would like to have my own film studio there and also rent it out as like sex parties and adult vacations and all of that.
People could get married there.
People could get married
in the slutty marriages.
Married in the vanilla section and then have your after party in the slut section. It's a dream. If you would like to be an angel investor, you can find me at allmylinks.com/JupiterJetson.
I was about to say that, Jupiter Jetson. Thank you so much for being a guest on Sex Stories.
It was a genuine pleasure talking about pleasure.
Lovers, that is our show. If you know a friend who would like this episode, please take a second to share it with them now. 52 Days of Play is underway, and there are so many fun ways to support and shape this next year of content. For example, if you would like private behind-the-scenes audio updates that include my sex stories, fantasies, work noodles, plus virtual co-working sessions, and a place to share your wins and wishes out loud Monday through Friday during the 52 Days of Play, join me on Patreon at patreon.com/YOLE. For the video versions of these private shares, along with exclusive daily live voyeur cam access where you can spy on me while I create, as well as interactive lives Monday through Friday, plus a mix of exclusive early access and behind-the-scenes photo and video shares during my 52 days of slutty creations, join me on OnlyFans at onlyfans.com/YOLE. Or, to just see teases and unlock one by one, join me on my free OnlyFans page, onlyfans.com/yofree. For private messages, calls, or video, you can also find me on sexpanther.com/yo. If you're not into the sexy stuff, you might want to sponsor a segment. Let me dedicate a daily wiggle, masturbation meditation, or a solo research episode to you, your boo, or your brand. You pick the topic or noodle and co-create with me. Details are on my website, yolee.com/52. I am also super into parallel play. Tell me, what does your hot person spring into summer look like right now? I'd love to hear what player pleasure you are noticing, practicing, or growing, or you can always answer one of my questions, ask me one of your own, or share a story via yolee.com/share. I especially love voice memos, but emails I can read on update episodes are also great. I would also love to know, what adult creator would you like to see me play with during my 52 days of play? Tell me so that I can send them an invitation by emailing xstoriespodcast@gmail.com. And I am accepting new photography clients now until the end of June. Details about how you can work with me are all on my website, yolee.com, and the link is in the description below. And sexstoriespodcast.com will always take you straight to the podcast landing page, or I guess I should say directly, because nothing I do is really straight. For those of you who don't know, X Stories is a completely independent creation. I fund the production of this podcast through my work as a content creator, photographer, and sex worker, and I appreciate each and every one of you that understands that your contribution to my work whether it's Patreon, OnlyFans, or creative session, photo shoot, voice memo, or written story for me to share, it is incredibly meaningful to me. My work is what lights me up in life. And my goal is to continue to create things that are also meaningful to you. So hearing from you helps me shape what I do. And when I don't hear from you, I feel like I'm just speaking into the void. So if you love this podcast and want it to continue, please let me know by leaving us up to 5 stars on Apple and Spotify. And for my birthday, I would love a thoughtful review on Apple Podcasts that lets others know why you love listening to Sex Stories. I am looking forward to getting to know more of you and going deeper during those 52 days of play. Remember, if you want to work or play with me, my website, wiley.com, is where you can find details of all that I do. Thank you for listening. Thank you for spreading ripples of love. Please take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Remember to hydrate, wiggle, and breathe. And may you be brave enough to share yourselves and your stories in the name of lovely human connection.